Welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. In each episode, we'll be offering insight and inspiration on a key current topic, advice on how to climb the career ladder, and top networking tips. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer, and I'm chairman of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to CMO of Lidu, Santu Kotala, about social selling. Chartered PR consultant and director at Metamorphic PR, John Clements, and group marketing director of Bovol, Polly Barton, share some great B2B marketing examples and what they've learned from them. And Elise Miller will share a key lesson that she's taken on the journey to being practitioner and specialist at ServiceNow. Lots to gather then, so we'd better get started. B2B marketing is tough and it's costly, so perhaps social selling is the answer. I'm joined by CMO of Lidu, Santu Kotala, who claims some success, I think, in this regard. Santu, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So, first of all, let's talk about Lidu. Tell us a little bit about what it is, what it does, and how it benefits its customers.
Oh, so the classic elevator pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're on floor one already.
Okay, so basically Lidu helps its clients to convert more leads from their website.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, cool. And it does that how?
With chatbots, creating personal dialogues with the website visitors, and so offering better customer service and customer experience.
So social selling then is the key to Lidu's success, perhaps. First of all, we should define what social selling is.
I like the definition game, I got to say. that is the thing with all us marketeers. I don't have a really brief definition for it. I would say that I would cut the selling part off, but it's doing marketing and selling in social channels.
Okay.
So influencing your buyers, decision makers, the broader audience in social channels.
Okay, so and selling is kind of the end result rather than necessarily the whole process.
That's the thing.
Process.
For example, if you're on LinkedIn to sell, then you are there for the wrong reasons.
Okay. So what made Lidu turn to social selling?
Well, I think that for us, for a growth company like us, social selling is by far the best and most cost-efficient way to seem bigger than you actually are. By facilitating your personnel in active dialogue in social channels, it can make you appear bigger and better than you
than you might initially be.
I
guess we should put this into a little bit of context. So you cover all of marketing across Lidu. How much of Lidu's marketing is about social selling?
Well, we're now around 16 months old.
Okay.
To the listeners, this podcast was recorded at the end of January. So.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
So basically the first 12 months, we didn't do any paid advertising or marketing at all. We only focused on social selling. I'm not proud of it, but we didn't have the money.
Sure.
But we were able to grow followers and, like I said, appear bigger than we were.
Mm-hmm. So and it sounds like the actual cost efficiency was perhaps one of the major driver, perhaps, to doing it.
Yeah, and in addition, the fact that we are providing a totally new solution to the market, so we need to discuss more and open our solution more. So it's not something we could print on the front page of a newspaper or to put it on an online banner. It doesn't cut it.
Okay, so it's something that you devoted most of the marketing team's attention to for those 16 months.
Actually the whole team, not just marketers, salespeople, customer success, tech team, everyone.
Okay. In terms of investment, though, it was relatively small, and that was one of the key drivers to you.
Yeah.
Okay. What about results?
Well, the first 12 months we were able to grow from nothing to over 400 customers in the Nordics. We grow from a team that was 3 people to a team of 35. Currently we are over 50 already. So I think it's really efficient.
And is it only about getting customers on board? Because you kind of talked a bit about wanting to be seen as being bigger than you are. So there's a kind of brand thing there as well.
It is. Like I said, I hate the definition or the word social selling. The selling part makes me not like it.
Yeah, it's kind of working with social media across the board from what you're saying.
And like the brand awareness part is the most important, especially for a small company. You cannot be on the top of your buyers' minds if you're not doing brand awareness.
So tell me about the brand awareness piece. You've told me in the 16 months that you've been going, what kind of results you've got in terms of customers on board, but what's happened to the brand?
Well, like I mentioned, we aren't the biggest company in Finland, but I'd say that there isn't a LinkedIn user, for example, in Finland who doesn't know Lidl.
Whoa, okay. That's cool. Are there other metrics?
We should be measuring it with qualitative researches, but haven't had the time to do it yet.
Okay. And looking at Lidl itself, I mean, as we've already talked about, it's a business that started off in Finland. It's now moving to the UK and wider.
Yeah.
So are there any circumstances that you think would make social selling more likely to succeed at Lidl than elsewhere?
Well, I think the key in successfully utilizing social selling is that you need to get the whole team involved. Like I mentioned, it's not just the marketing team, it's the whole team at Lidl.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, actually, there are like probably 3 things that I find is the most like important as kind of like a key to success. And the first one is to support the team with ideas. And I don't mean that you should be writing a lot of content about the company itself. Rather, offering your team curated content which they could then share. And it shouldn't be your own content. It could be a content piece from the BMC blog, for example, or a BMC podcast. It's just to so that you get to build that trust between you and your followers and connections.
Okay. Any other ways that you have managed to kind of inspire your team?
Well, like I mentioned, the support with ideas, constant teach and training. And I see that it's not just to train the ones that aren't that used to doing social selling. We train both of those. So we do train the high performers. We try to build them into industry expert level. But then on the newbies, so to say, probably I for example, I even write posts for them.
Okay.
And with them.
Okay.
To get them started, to help them out, to show what the results are, what the traction is, and then bit by bit, they will start doing it themselves.
And you talk about involving the whole business here. So what are all the different components of the business doing?
Participating in conversations.
Okay.
So that's the key. And I think most companies go wrong when they only post stuff and they post stuff about their company. Because the key in social selling isn't posting about yourself. It's about commenting and participating in discussions started by someone else.
Okay, so I'm imagining that everybody in Lidl is kind of harnessing their own networks to get to have those kind of conversations, engage them, and talk about Lidl in consequence.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's how I feel that like social selling is really close to customer experience.
Yeah,
because like we know, customer experience is 360. So we don't get to choose how our customers experience us.
Mm.
So our every team member needs to be at his or her best all the time,
yeah.
which is it's hard
it's
work.
It's a tough ask.
Yeah, it is. But then it pays off.
Okay. And so if people have listened to this podcast and are kind of interested in what you've been saying there and how you've been successful at Leedy, how would you recommend they get started on the social selling track? You know, how do you make this happen within your business?
Well, for example, I'd love to help. Doesn't cost a dime, but I think it comes down to three facts. So facilitate the posting that it's as easy as possible for your people.
Mm.
Make sure everyone does it. It's not just the marketing department. Train and then even write the posts for your people. I'd say the last one is the most important.
Mm. So kind of roll your sleeves up and actually make things happen down on the ground.
Yeah.
CMO of Leedy, Santu Kotila, thank you very much. B2B marketing and communications are amazing, and it's time to celebrate them because it's the toughest profession in business. And that means when you get it right, it's the most rewarding thing in the world. And in the times when you've cracked it, you've got that brilliant king of the hill feeling, you've made it. And, you know, there's some great B2B marketing and communications out there right now. And I'm joined by chartered PR consultant and director of Metamorphic PR, John Clements, to talk about some of it. So, John, some great stuff out there. What's caught your eye?
So we worked with a company last year in a very interesting space, which is in the oil and fuel industry, a company called John Hogg. They're involved in what's called fuel marking. And fuel marking is a way of protecting and securing the supply chain in the production of fuel.
Okay.
The purpose of it is to stop fuel fraud, which is a huge problem, and fuel theft, which causes a whole range of problems for companies in that space. So reputation problems, but also fuel fraud funds illicit crime, and it harms the environment. So this is a big deal.
Mm.
They were appearing at the annual industry conference for this area, and they wanted to stand out from the typical marketing communications that you will see in that sector,
right,
which tends to focus on the science and the technical innovation. Now, of course, there is a place for that, but John Hogg wanted to look and to sound different from both from what they'd done before, but also from their competitors. And they wanted to get their customers to think about the issue of fuel fraud as fundamental to the reputation of their businesses and feeding into their role as corporate citizens. So what we wanted to help them do was create a strategic communications theme that was just very different from what they'd done before. So instead of focusing on the science and on the products, we wanted to look at the human factor, create this collective sense of purpose and mission in the industry, and to speak with a more direct and almost a campaigning tone for a private sector company.
So it's really interesting to look at difference, because I think in our professions, quite often we're asked to come up with stuff that is unique and, you know, completely different. Is that possible? You know, is difference really out there?
Mm. Well, I believe that we found it.
Okay,
In this particular example, because of their previous focus on technicalities and products, we wanted to really bring out the human element of what fuel fraud does to people worldwide. So we came up with a theme, and that was face up to fuel fraud.
Okay,
and there were two elements to that. Facing up to something is you're challenging. You know, you're challenging the conception about what fuel fraud is. And also it's putting out an imperative for the industry to work together and to challenge that problem. So what we wanted to do based on that overall theme of face up to fuel fraud was to educate the sector on the threats posed by fuel fraud, as well as explaining and demonstrating best practice, the type of work that John Hogg does, through thought leadership and content and case studies and the like, but to emphasise the difference that John Hogg was making.
Okay, and what reaction did that approach provoke?
So I was admittedly nervous in putting forward the ideas that we had, because this was quite a step change for them. And I was pleased to see that they absolutely bought into it. It was almost as if it was something they'd been looking for themselves, but had not quite managed to reach or to find. And then it became a collaborative discussion about the concept. Mm. It wasn't just, here's our idea, please, you know, please buy into it. It became our idea.
Great. And that's always when you know you've really got something, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And so with that, it became a very much a collaborative process in understanding how far we could go with it and how we could deliver it tactically, which we did through a number of things. For example, we had a 3D microsite with an interactive fuel pump.
Okay.
So we have an interactive fuel pump that's rotating, and the fuel pump is designed to look like a human face.
Okay.
Coming back to face up to fuel fraud. And so you would click on different parts of the fuel pump and it would reveal text covering different elements of the issue of fuel fraud.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was something that it just stood out as being different. And part of the issue was to try to educate people attending this conference ahead of the conference and to begin to warm them up to the idea of this idea, this theme, this purpose. So then the other thing we did was worked very closely with them on creating a keynote speech. They had a slot at the conference as conference sponsors, and they wanted to look and sound like nobody else. So as a result of that, one of their competitors had said to the B2B marketing colleagues that we worked with at the company, they said, your speech was presidential.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so to us, that meant that it had achieved the level of gravitas that they wanted.
Okay.
They wanted it to have that significance.
So good feedback there, but what were the broader results?
Sure. So for them, it was a door opener at the conference with potential customers and partners in different overseas markets, because they work with oil producers worldwide. So it created awareness with the conference attendees ahead of the conference. And what those people said was that the messaging that they saw through the marketing communications activity had resonated with them, and they praised it for being so different and standing out. So it helped them to create certain partnerships that they didn't have before, and opened up discussions with potential clients as well in different parts of the world.
And it sounds like it's got the potential to be long lasting, so not just a kind of short term event focus thing.
Yeah, that was actually part of the objective for us, was to have something that would do exactly what you describe, work for the conference in the medium term, but also be something that they could use as a platform to revisit, because it had that perennial quality to it. And it's a problem that's not going away anytime soon. And so it's something that they could certainly build on.
Brilliant. So what have you learned from this that you're going to apply to future engagements?
Sure. Well, I think, coming back to your point earlier about, is there something new? Is there something new? And I think it's worth always really focusing and digging deeply when you can into finding something different to say, something different to do, and a different way to present it. When you look at it, perhaps initially, it's not always apparent. And this idea was literally one of those middle of the night ideas. You get up and you go, I've got to write this down or I'll never remember it in the morning. And when I looked at it again in the morning, I felt, I think this is going to work. And so you never know. And sometimes it takes a bit of sitting on the objectives, sitting on the purpose that the client wants to achieve. And then over a number of days, inspiration. Inspiration can be there, but it doesn't just come out of thin air. It does take some working around and looking at your strategy and thinking, where do we need to get with this?
John Clements, Chartered PR Consultant and Director of Metamorphic PR. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Next up, Polly Barton, Group Marketing Director at Beauville. Polly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, great B2B marketing out there. What's caught your eye?
Well, Dave, I'm going to cheat and I'm going to talk about three different things which have caught my eye recently.
Okay.
But I think there is a theme here about choosing the right tools for the right situation and using them well. Sounds obvious, but I think there are quite a lot of pitfalls. So the first is something that just happened today, and it's always good to have a story that just happened this morning.
It's current.
A couple of members of my team were very excited to receive some direct mail, some innovative direct mail. Mm. It arrived in a black sort of sack with gold writing on with their names contained a sort of princess fairy tale story about about our company, and you know, whoever sent it had clearly understood what we did. They understood our proposition. They name dropped some of our competitors. It was a beautifully piece put together, creative piece of direct marketing by an account based marketing agency. So far, so good.
Okay.
I think they did two things very wrong.
Okay, well, we shouldn't name the agency on that case. Yeah.
The first thing they did is it came across as beautifully personal account-based marketing, but they'd sent it to two people who sit next to each other.
Right.
So the handwritten card
seemed less personal.
Was clearly not handwritten. Yeah. And a number of other things immediately took that impact and personal nature away from it. But the thing that was much more sort of schoolboy error was they hadn't put enough postage on it. So we as a company had to pay for the privilege of receiving this.
Okay.
You know, it's great to see people.
But hey, it's giving you podcast material.
It's great to see people using direct mail again. Fantastic. And it's great to see creativity. Mm. But what they've done is position themselves as people who don't understand the real fundamentals of sending somebody a letter, which isn't ever going to make me want to use them. Caution.
That's a pity, but based on a decent platform by the sounds of it.
The second thing I wanted to talk about was LinkedIn, which is obviously a tool that we all use as sort of second nature now, and we use it in our sort of personal life as well as for work. And I was sort of scrolling through it the other day, as we all do, and asking myself why. It was so dull, and the number of people who are delighted or thrilled or excited to be launching something or absolutely passionate, and it's just nonsense. And no one likes it. And we all do it, you know. We're all guilty of putting it out there. And actually, a few weeks ago, there was a marketing professional who I've met through BMC, who I'm connected with, who works for a software company and had put up a post saying, I'm trying to work on new visuals for a campaign. I'm not sure to go for A, B or C. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And this is a marketer talking to other marketers, right? So far, so good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many, but maybe 20, 30 different people commented on it, liked each other's comments, chatted, swapped notes. I think you might have done, Dave.
I did.
And I start thinking either this isn't intended or it's really, really clever.
Yeah.
Because she's amplified that message and
we
might not be the buyers, but between us, we've probably got 500, 1,000 contacts each. Mm. And I just thought that is genius because it's LinkedIn is about human interaction that has to feel natural. And, you know, thinking through how that tool can be used cleverly to amplify a message, I thought was genius.
Mm-hmm. That's very well thought through.
I must find out if she got lots of business off the back of it.
Maybe she can come to the next podcast and tell us.
Indeed, indeed. And finally, and I have to talk about something I do because, if you can't blow your own trumpet, what can you do?
Why not?
but it's actually what I like to sort of think of as invisible marketing. So it's something that no one else would ever notice or blow my trumpet about. Mm. And I suppose in particular, I suppose it's using, as we do a lot in professional services, using email invitations to get people to come to events. and the sort of default thing most marketing teams, I think, would do is say, well, you need this event to demonstrate insight, thought leadership. We need something that, you know, is creative, well worded, looks slick. We need to use a great tool to send it out and that sort of thing. And in my view, that's not always going to be the best, the most effective way of doing that. So specifically, I work in a small financial services consulting firm, and we run a number of events, including sort of industry roundtables. And when I joined, we'd had not a lot of success in selecting an appropriate list of 40 or 50 senior individuals to invite with the hope of getting 15 in the room, thinking through some insightful things we might want to discuss, and sending out emails saying, here's the date, here's the subject, John to come.
Yeah.
And actually getting a really, really poor return rate.
Okay.
Because it's very easy to ignore. And you're targeting quite senior people. Mm. What we now do, and it's actually fairly formulaic, is find two people who we think might want to come, who we know, phone them up. We get the consultant who knows them to phone them up, chat it through with them so they feel like it's partly their idea and get them to commit to a date, then ask them who else they think should come. And then we grow it out like that.
Mm.
And then when we get to a confident six people, we're able to send emails out from consultants, but carefully crafted by the marketing department to reflect our tone of voice and our brand and our credibility, which basically say there's a bit of research. Sorry, I didn't get to see you at such and such a conference. There's a name drop. We're having this event. These three companies are coming along. Thought you might want to come too. And there's a bit of insight. Obviously, topics we're talking about are this, that, and the other. But we're happy to talk about what you want to talk about. And it brings together those sort of marketing ideas of personalization, of referrals, of, you know, brand, tone of voice, credibility, listening rather than telling. And actually, it's a formula that we've used again and again. And we have great open discussions where we look incredibly credible because we're chairing them.
Mm.
And we get to listen to people's business issues, which obviously for a consulting firm is perfect.
Which is great. So if I go back to your kind of overlying theme of the right tools done well, I guess it's about personalization. It's about compelling content. It's about thinking through the end-to-end experience.
Yeah, there's the detail there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the thing, you know, going to your marketing toolbox and say, well, this, I know how to do an event. I know how to do an invitation. I know how to do social media. I know how to do, whatever else. You can get really complacent. Actually, you know, those sort of, that bit of thinking about what am I actually trying to do? Who am I communicating with? How is this tool really going to work? And have I thought of everything that might go wrong? I think is vital in everything we do.
Polly Barton, Group Marketing Director at Bovril, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next up, Elise Miller shares a key lesson that she's taken on the journey to becoming ABM practitioner and B2B marketing specialist at ServiceNow. Elise, thanks for coming to the podcast.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So perhaps first of all, you should tell us a little bit about what ServiceNow is and does.
So ServiceNow is a software as a service company, one of the fastest growing companies in the world. We are on a mission to become the most innovative company and $10 billion of revenue by the end of 2020. So huge growth, really exciting company to work for.
It sounds great. So you're the ABM practitioner and B2B marketing specialist there. What's got you there?
A number of things, actually. It's really interesting. So I think partially where I've started. So my career originally started at agency side.
Okay.
So I work for a B2B full service agency, and I got the pleasure of working with a number of very large tech clients, all the way from America to EMEA, and some of them also in Asia. And that's really given me a huge understanding of the broader marketing experience, from digital to account-based marketing to technology and brand. And I think that's the grounding that you really need to understand what you like, what you don't like, and what you'd like to focus on, and gives you a really, really good set off into your career.
So it's that breadth of understanding of what makes up the bits of marketing that is important.
Exactly. And what customers like, where the journey started and where it ends, and all of the multiple touch points along the way.
And does that mean actually you have to do every job in that kind of area to really get to be able to understand how it works and comes together?
I wouldn't say every job, but I think what it gives you is it gives you an understanding of what customers are like, so working directly with customers, what it's like to get an awareness element of it in terms of brand awareness, in terms of digital, in terms of technology, and also what it's like to work in sales. I think that's a really, really huge element of the journey. Luckily, I had a little bit of experience and exposure in inside sales, listening into sales conversation, actually taking the time to join sales in their day-to-day life and understand what it's like to face the pressure of meeting a sales target.
So customer, brand and sales awareness. Yes. But perhaps we could just take each one of those things. So how has a better understanding of the customer helped shape you as a B2B marketer?
I think being able to spend a day in customer shoes, so spending, going to meetings, understanding what really drives their strategy, what really drives them as a person, how are they responding to market pressures, all of those things really form a huge element of ABM in my eyes, and really give you a foundation of how you might try to tackle them and really add value. So cherry picking elements of your organization and all of the value that you can bring to them is really, really the fundamental element of ABM. And I think that's what it gives you.
Okay, so that's kind of priority number one. And then you had brand. So tell me a bit about how important that is.
So being an ABMer, I've got a certain view of brand, but I think things like brand, things like digital, things like being top of mind, they're really, really key. But I think they create almost a top layer of what the customer sees. But I think you really need to get to the bottom of, if you're trying to market to a company, you're really marketing to people, because that's what the company is made up of. And all of those people would have their personal circumstances, their personal ambitions. They'll form a part of a group, and the group will have their initiatives, they'll have the drivers, and then all of those people will then form a company. So all of those elements really influence what they might think about you and their starting point and their perception.
Okay, so it's kind of getting to the heart of what the company's about.
Yes, that's it.
And then your third pillar was sales.
So I think that's probably the most important line in my view. So I've spent on multiple occasions I've spent time actually working in with sales. I've spent a day working with inside sales, so actually making some cold calls myself, understanding what that's really like and the pressures of that. Spending a lot of time traveling to see customers with sales, spending time with them looking at various spreadsheets and pipeline and attribution elements to understand what really drives them.
Right.
And actually all the fun elements of nurturing the customer, getting to the bottom what they're trying to achieve, and really down to what products are we going to sell them and how we're going to achieve the target by the end of the year. I think that's really, really tough. And once you understand the pressures that they're facing, I think it really shapes you as a marketer and gives you a grounding of how you might go about helping them.
kind of links back to what you were saying about the customer, because you were talking about getting into the customer's shoes. So here you're kind of getting into the salesperson's shoes, aren't you?
I have a term that I really like, which is business empathy.
Okay.
And I think that's all about understanding somebody, why they feel what they feel and what they're feeling in the first place. And I think that really applies in business. And I think that's the heart of ABM, understanding what's driving somebody, whether it's sales or whether it's a customer, and then the responding to those needs.
I like that. So business empathy, how do I go about acquiring that as a skill?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I think partially it comes down to personality. And I think many people will just find it within them. It's the same way that you might interact with your friends and you might put yourself in someone's shoes. But also, I think just spending time with somebody, spending time to ask them, you know, what's really driving you? What have you got on your plate? And making sure that you understand that and you're making it easy for both the sales and the customer to get what they need.
Elise Miller, ABM practitioner and B2B marketing specialist at ServiceNow. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Santu Kotala, John Clemens, Polly Barton and Elise Miller. And thanks to you for listening. Please do let us know what you thought of today's podcast. You can give us a rating or a review or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've got something interesting, practical and visionary to share with our listeners, why not volunteer to be a guest on a future podcast? But no sales pitches, product demos, creds presentations and theoretical nonsense, please. That's strictly out of the studio only. You can also join the Business Marketing Club for events, mentoring and thought leadership for the B2B marketing community. And you can do that right now by pressing the big yellow join button at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. That's it. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you have a brilliant day.